Of odd to suddenly find myself standing on this side, because I get to do most of my speaking either from the middle or the other side. So, get a different view this morning. We've learned a few things recently, and so I just want to give us a couple of reminders. We've learned that Patrick unpacks things. We've learned that Ken dissects things. So I went and looked and thought, what is it that I'm going to do today? And knowing that unpacking was taken, dissecting things was taken, and I looked at what I did for 40 years, and I analyzed things. So I said, well, I guess that's what I'll do with this text, is I'm going to analyze it. Now, if you ask Shirley, she would tell you that I'm going to overanalyze it. And there's probably a lot of truth to that. A few weeks ago, Ken spoke to us, and he said he got a whole new appreciation for what Patrick has to do each week in order to speak to us. Well, I now have that same appreciation, and my hat's off to Patrick that he goes through that preparation, because I know what I went through. But there's something else to it, and that is an enlightening effect. Okay, I learn things out of these verses that I probably never would have picked up if I wasn't doing that level of preparation. So again, I appreciate what Patrick does, and I appreciate having this opportunity. So in January, Patrick approached me, and he said, ask if I would be willing to speak on one of a couple of Sundays. And they were, of course, one in February, which, because we're in March, you can tell I didn't take the February date, and one in March. And I looked at the texts and prayed about it. Then I asked Shirley about it, and she read the texts. And she went, does Patrick know what we've spent the last couple of years doing? And I said, I don't know, but he will by the time I'm done. So for those that don't know, we remodeled our home in Burlington, and one of the major outcomes was to build an apartment attached to our home for my mother. And so I started analyzing this and thought, okay, this sounds like a good place to start analyzing. So why did we do that? And the first thing I thought was, okay, God knew Patrick was going to ask me to speak on this topic. So now I got some experience dealing with it. God might also know that at some point I'm going to need some firsthand experience, because somebody's going to ask a question and now I've got some firsthand experience on the topic. Maybe God knew that I needed to do more for my mother. Well, I'm going to say there's a resounding yes to all of those. The answer is yes to all the above. No doubt, God has a plan, and I think I certainly believe in that. And so God knew that I would be asked to speak on a topic. God knew I needed to do more. I guess we have to wait and see if I'm going to be able to help somebody else in the future. Now, I get to end today at verse 8. Patrick gets to deal with verse 9 and following, which is kind of the restrictions on all this. So, Patrick, good luck. Hopefully, we're going to see a couple of themes that I'm wanting to touch on today. Well, I guess it's more than a couple. We want to touch on caring. Hopefully, we're going to see that we have an obligation to care for widows and families. We're going to touch on charity, helping and giving. We're going to touch on support. What is it to help care for widows? In order to do that, we need to have awareness and have an awareness of people's needs. I really appreciate Cliff's song choices, but we're going to touch on love because that's an underlying theme through all of this. And we're going to touch on family. That's one of the key hallmarks of the Christian life is family. But then I have to do a couple of apologies. Some people are going to listen to this and go, he's talking about me. Some people are going to go, he wasn't talking about me. Some people may be a little offended at some of the things I have to say. That's not my intention, but I apologize for that. And lastly, I know that I'm not the most eloquent or dynamic speaker, but I think I've got a message, so I ask for your indulgence. So let's start into the text, and let's look at verse 3. Give proper recognition to those widows who are really in need. Well, one of the things that if you've sat in any of my adult Bible classes, I've said that I read a number of commentators, and I usually try to use about 3, and then I do the best 2 out of 3 to decide what needs to be included. Well, I think this time for this, I said, this probably needs a little bit more attention. So I used 7. You can bet then that what I did was I did the best 4 out of 7 in this one to find out what really needs to be included and what needs to be said. You're also going to may remember in the sermon synopsis that I sent out, I said one of the first things we need to do with, as with any text, is we need to figure out what applied to the first century, what applies to us, and how do we take that and put it to use? And verse 3 is one of those things that commentators seem to believe really applied most of all back in the first century. However, I'm going to suggest that there still is significant application to us. Now, why do I say that? The commentators see strong evidence that widows that were really in need may have had a certain measure of care given to them by the church. Acts 6, 1 through 7 records the appointment of service to oversee the distribution of food to widows. So there was clearly care for widows going on. Now, we tend to look at this verse, and we tend to want to use this verse as a reason or as part of the justification for appointing servants. And I don't wish to minimize that, but let's keep track once of why they needed to appoint servants. And that was to oversee the food distribution to widows. And maybe even just as important or more important is how does that passage end in verse 7? It says, as a result, the word of God spread. So the care that the church gave resulted in the word spreading. So that, I think, is significant. Now, I am not very good with Greek, so you're going to have to bear with me on some of these pronunciations. I really struggle with this. But The Greek word here for translated really in need is chira. Now, what does it really translate to? It means bereaved, conveying distressed circumstance. Now, while I can't say that I've ever been a widow, I won't ever be a widow, but I've been able to watch what my mother's gone through, not once, but twice. So I can understand a certain level of what she's been through. Now, having said these things, widows clearly had an important role in the church in the first century. Let's take a look once at Acts 2, or Luke 2, verses 36 to 38. Talks about a widow, the prophet Anna, who was talking about Jesus. Beginning again in Luke 2, verse 36. There was also a prophet, Anna, the daughter of Penuel, of the tribe of Asher. She was very old. She had lived with her husband 7 years after her marriage, and then was a widow until she was 84. She never left the temple, but worshipped night and day, fasting and praying. Coming up to them at that very moment, she gave thanks to God and spoke about the child to all who were looking forward to the redemption of Jerusalem. So here in this story, we have an individual, Anna, who was a widow and also a prophet. And she had important things to say about Jesus. So I think there's important things that we can learn from widows. Also in this belief among commentators that the work that widows might have done for the church is they might have provided care for other widows. Okay, there's, I'm sure, some commonality between them that they can find care among one another. They may have cared for orphans. Again, remember that this was a different time, and there were no social service programs, which means orphans were either going to be truly orphans with nobody to look after them, or the church was going to look after them. And widows could be uniquely qualified to care for orphans. They may have cared for sick. They may have simply spent their day in prayer. Now, I say simply, not to minimize the value of prayer. I use the word simply because it's one of the activities that can be done without a physical activity. You don't have to exert physical activity in order to spend your time in prayer. So widows were able to provide service to the church that would have been very beneficial in the first century. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit later about where we can see that applying today. So just hold those thoughts for a while. Now, for the moment, I want to skip over verse 4 and go to verse 5. Verse 4 still is in the coming attractions. The widow who is really in need and left all alone puts her hope in God and continues night and day to pray and ask God for help. So let's overanalyze this just a little bit. The widow who is really in need and left all alone. This is someone who has no descendants. Now, because many of us have families, we grew up in families, we lose track of the fact sometimes that there are people that don't have descendants, don't have a family. And those people are worth our notice to provide care for them, to provide support for them. The text goes on to say that she puts her hope in God. Since she has no earthly dependence, her hope, her faith, has to be rooted in God. Now, I also read into this, the text doesn't say it, but I read into that the church family. By the way, that's all of us. And then it continues to go on and say, and continues night and day in prayer and ask God for help. This idea of continual prayer, we've seen it in this passage, but it's happened earlier, even in 1 Timothy. Paul tells Timothy, I urge then first of all that petitions, prayers, intercession, and thanksgiving be made for all people. Now, who's all people? That's me. That's you. That's widows. That's orphans. That's anyone in need. Is everyone. Now, we got to keep in mind that back in the first century, there were no government programs. There were no social assistance. The Middle East Social Welfare Office hadn't been created yet. Families were expected to provide for widows. The most vulnerable would have been those without families, without children. So who would step up in those environments? The church would step up. So here are some, I want to talk for a moment about some practical things that we could do. Some of this is going to seem common sense, but some of it I want to underscore a little bit. Phone calls. You know, a phone call can mean a lot to somebody because it says you're thinking about that person. It says you care. It says you're aware. Notice those were all topics out of the theme. So we can make phone calls to encourage them. Cards. You know, I want to stop here and throw just a personal note for the people that are in the ministry that sends out the cards and notes. What I'm sure most of you don't know was a number of years ago, I slid into some depression before I started coming to Southside. But at that time, Shirley had already started coming to Southside. And clearly she had put me on the prayer list in the ladies' class. I got a card from Julia, okay, encouraging me. Okay, that card, that one simple activity meant more than you can understand. It snapped me out of it. It got me coming to Southside. Now, maybe if you want, you could blame Julia for the fact that you're listening to this message today. Because, you know, if it weren't for that card, I wouldn't have been coming here. Patrick wouldn't have been able to ask me, and you wouldn't have had to listen to this. So, cards are, those phone calls and cards can be crucially important. And I want to encourage those people that are doing those cards. Visits. You know, when somebody is all alone and they don't have family coming to see them, that visit can make all the difference in the world. Again, what does it do? It says we're aware. It says we care. It says we love that person. It says you're part of the family. Meals. You know, one of the things that I could see with my mother, I didn't see it at the time, was that as she spent more and more time alone, she spent more and more time with herself. She didn't have anybody to spend time with. Well, she cooked less. She lost weight. So the simple act of preparing a meal means that, and that meal, by the way, can come in the form of something ready to eat, or it can come as something frozen to be prepared at a later time. That meal can make a huge difference that we can't even begin to understand from the outside. Rides for medical appointments. You know, we don't understand sometimes how important that can be. But when my father passed away, my mother had never driven, which meant that the only way she was going anywhere was if myself or one of my brothers took her. So those rides were her only way of getting out or having somebody come to pick her up. Now, there's some things, I just touched on the obvious ones. There are some things that maybe are a little less obvious that I got to say I've become more aware of in recent weeks. Shelter. Okay, sometimes basic shelter can be important. Safety. Now, the kind of safety here I'm talking about may be the simple safety of, is the home she's living in set up for her to be able to be alone? We've provided rides recently for one of those. I've done some of those rides for medical appointments and then became aware that the person that I was taking back, their house really wasn't as well set up for them, and it scared me to death when I took that person home. Was that person really going to be safe there? So, safety. Now, all of those things that I mentioned in the obvious, the calls, the cards, the visits, those things go a distance to covering safety. Now, we always have reasons, or I'll call them impediments. It sounds better. Impediments for caring for family or widows. One of them is distance. We live in a society where we're more apart than they were generally in the first century. In this case, when my father passed away, I lived 10 miles from my mother. My brother lived about 2 miles away. So we were right nearby. Distance wasn't a factor. When Mom remarried, she moved to Arizona. Now there was a distance. So when my stepfather passed away, now we had a distance. It wasn't just get in the car and drive for 15 minutes. It was get in the car and drive to the airport after buying an airline ticket, get on the plane, fly to Phoenix, now drive the 2.5 hours from Phoenix, and the whole time you're worried about what you're going to find when you get there. So distance can be a problem. Independence. One of the things my mother had learned, and it took me a while to learn this, is she had gained a lot of independence over that time. She had to learn how to do things herself. Yes, she does drive now, by the way. But she was living in her own apartment. By the way, before we remodeled, she had moved from Arizona to East Troy. So I was back down now to the closer to half an hour distance. But she had grown very independent. And sometimes that independence is difficult to give up. I'm going to touch on that in just a moment. Finance. Does the widow have the necessary finances to even be on their own? If you're going to take in mom, do you have the finances to do that? Space. I'm not sure which was worse, space or independence. So if mom's going to move in, you're all of a sudden going to give up some space and some privacy. If you're going to build a space for mom, it's probably not going to be as big as where she's at. And she's going to give up space, and she's going to give up privacy. That was a tough one. Time. Sometimes we might want to say time is priorities. However, I also want to be very sensitive to our current era. There's a lot of people who work two jobs in order to make ends meet. So making time can be a challenge. Sometimes there can be some embarrassment involved. This might be the most difficult one for us to get past because we are all very concerned about, or maybe I should say many of us, I have to raise my hand, I tend to be aware of what people think. I may not care, but I'm aware of what they think. So what do our relatives think that about our helping out, or maybe interfering, they might see? What do our friends and neighbors think? Do they think it's a good idea? Do they think it's a bad idea? Distractions. You know, family can be a distraction. You know, it can take us away from things that we want to be doing. But when we're helping for family, when we're helping family, when we're caring for family, we're not distracted. Family becomes the distraction from the evil one. Now, in that, under that category of priorities, I do want to throw a little, just a little awareness that even in the first century there was some disagreement. I'm not going to touch on why there was disagreement, but I'll leave you to draw your own conclusion. The Pharisees taught that gifts to God were better than caring for parents. That seems a little difficult for me to reconcile in my own mind. But let's take a look once at Matthew 15, verses 5 and 6. But you say that if anyone declares that what might have been used to help their father or mother is devoted to God, by the way, this is Jesus speaking, they are not to honor their father and mother with it. Thus you nullify the word of God for the sake of your tradition. So Jesus was clearly pointing out that care for family, putting the money into care for family, was more important. Sorry, Brad. I may have just taken a hit on the treasury, so I apologize for that one. Now, lest we not just have one contradiction of what the Pharisees had to say, Paul goes on in verse 8, in case you were wondering if I was going to get to verse 8. Paul contradicts the Pharisees' teaching in verse 8 and says, anyone who does not provide for their relatives, and especially for their own household, has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. I think that's a pretty strong statement to encourage us to caring for family. There was a verse in here that I gotta tell you that I very clearly misunderstood. And so I want to share my understanding after study. Verse 6, but the widow who lives for pleasure is dead, even while she lives. While on the surface, the statement makes sense. However, the Greek word translated as pleasure, and I'm not going to try to pronounce this because I'll make it worse than any of the other ones that I've done, means to live in luxury, live in indulgence, freely eating and drinking, pampering. It does not convey any illegal or illicit activity. Boy, that one hit me squarely between the eyes, because here was a verse that I'd read for a long time and thought I understood, and I didn't. Now, what this verse really is an exclamation point that needs to underscore for us that true happiness or purpose in life is not found in indulgence. Now, don't misunderstand me. Having means is not wrong. I would count myself as one of those people with means generally. So having means is not wrong. How means are used can be wrong. Means can be used to accomplish much good. Now, a word for what ministers and leaders have to do. Sorting wants and needs can be a tough job for those people that are ministers, ministry leaders, and the number of calls that they get looking for help, and they have to sort through the real people who need help versus the real people looking to take advantage of the church is a daunting task. Pray for those people. So why do we want to care for widows? In case I've not gotten my point across yet, let me make some observations here. In verse 5, the NIV uses the words all alone. The King James uses the word desolate. Now, I must admit that I usually prefer the NIV translation. But this is one of those times that maybe the King James has a better translation. When do we use the word desolate? We use it usually to refer to a desert. We say that a desert is a desolate place. It lacks life. You're all alone. And that's one of those things that we have to keep in mind with widows, is that they're all alone. They're grieved. Grieved and alone is a bad combination. When you're feeling alone, you're feeling grieved, that can be a tough place. However, there's an easy thing we can do. Remember those calls, those cards, the prayers? We can help to try to relieve some of that pain and loneliness. Now, I talked about in the first century what the commentators thought that of the involvement of widows in the church. And I also said there were going to be, that I was going to make some references to programs where we could help out. I believe that we could find opportunities to involve widows that would ease the loneliness, ease the grieving, give them more purpose to life. You know, I know my parents had been married for a good long time, although my dad, I was fairly young when my dad passed away. But I got to watch that firsthand. And so giving them a sense of purpose becomes important. Now, if you're in doubt about the value of purpose, let me guide your thoughts to something called senior centers or hospital volunteers. These are groups that provide activities generally for retirees. Okay? Now, why does a retiree, there's a number of us in the number here that have been through retirement in recent years. So I think I can maybe touch a little bit of a sense here. When you've worked someplace, or you've had your working life for 40 or 45 or 50 years or more, and you retire, you can lose your sense of purpose. You wonder what it is that you're supposed to do next. While I've never been a widow, I have to suspect that they go through that same thing. And so we need to find a way to give them a sense of purpose. Now, my references so far have come out of the New Testament. But the Old Testament has some things to say as well. So let's look at Jeremiah 49:11, just so that we can have some reference here. Jeremiah 49:11 says, "Leave your fatherless children, I will keep them alive. Your widows too can depend on me." The fifth commandment of the Ten Commandments, let's not lose track of that. Genesis 20:12 says, "Honor your father and mother so that you may live long in the land the Lord is giving you." So if your father isn't there anymore, your mother still deserves that honor. In fact, I'm going to suggest maybe she deserves more honor. We've seen in our text, and I'll go as far as to say that it's the duty of children, if their parents are in need and they're able to help maintain them. Now, I haven't done a lot, you might note, with verses 4 and 8. So let me do my overanalysis of those verses for a couple of minutes, if you'll indulge me. Verse 4 says, "But if a widow has children or grandchildren, these should learn first of all to put their religion into practice by caring for their own family and so repaying their parents and grandparents. For this is pleasing to the Lord." But if a widow has children, I've always wondered about that "but" on the front of that, because I was always told that when you used a "but," it meant ignore the things that were before that. So I got a little problem there. But if a widow has children, they would be expected to contribute to their support. Or grandchildren. Remember, I referenced the King James earlier? Well, here's another one of those differences between the NIV and the King James, where I prefer the NIV, because the King James uses the word nephews in there. And commentators indicate that this was a tie back to the Old English of when that was translated, when nephews really included children and grandchildren. They should learn first to put their religion into practice by caring for their own family. This is simply showing Christian kindness rather than expecting support. And so repaying their parents and grandparents. Now, I don't want to have anybody believe that a parent or grandparent can ever be repaid for the effort they put into bringing up a child, nor do I want to suggest that they should ever expect to be repaid. It's a principle for us to remember that there's an opportunity to give honor where honor is due. And then there's the exclamation point that goes at the end of that verse. For this is pleasing to God. So if nothing else in that verse got your attention, for this is pleasing to God, should get your attention. Paul reiterated this idea in Ephesians 6, the first three verses. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may go well with you, and you may enjoy long life on earth. Verse 8. Anyone who does not provide for their relatives, and especially for their own household, has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. There's another one of those exclamation points that should get our attention. Even the pagan moralists of the day understood the importance of caring for family. Didn't want to ever be inferior to an unbeliever. But certainly not least, God cares for us, his family. In turn, we can care for our family. So, in summary, I believe we have a moral and biblical obligation to widows and families. Children have an ongoing responsibility to honor parents. You know, I put down here, even in their old age. I'll change that and say especially in their old age. Now, Jesus provided us an example here in John 19, 26 and 27. When Jesus saw his mother there, and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to her, "Woman, here is your son." And to the disciple, "Here is your mother." From that time on, the disciple took her into his home. So Jesus has given us an example. And then verse 7, I haven't touched on. How many times have we heard, and I'm going to say, if you've got children, you've heard this at some time or another. I know I have. "Nobody told me. I didn't know that." Well, let's read verse 7. "Give the people these instructions so that no one may be open to blame." Paul gave Timothy a pretty strong instruction. He didn't want anybody to be able to say, "Nobody told me." Now, I said I was going to give you a reference for a personal reference to some social programs and how they can benefit. And when I'm talking about social programs here, I'm talking about social programs in the church. So Kevin was talking about conversion stories earlier, which got me thinking about my conversion story. Well, it was as a result of one of those church social programs. It was called foster care. What many of you, maybe none of you know, is Shirley was a foster child. And so I met her in high school while she was in foster care. She got me to go to church with them. That foster care program was part of a church program. So she got me to go to church, where I was ultimately baptized. Those programs at that church were rather unique. It went on for the entire day on Sunday. So when you went to church in the morning, you went to church for the morning, you had class, you had service, you had lunch. Then there were programs to visit shut-ins. There were programs to conduct services at nursing homes. There were opportunities to serve the sick. But as I said, one of those programs was foster care that the church undertook. So without those programs, earlier I said that Julia got me coming to Southside. Well, I'll back it up even further to say one of those programs got me converted and even got me to the point that I was able to get that card. So now I've told you a bit about my conversion story and the importance of those programs. Patrick said something last week, as I wrap this up, that struck a chord. And in fact, I wrote it down last week. He said, and I may get this quote wrong, Patrick, so I apologize. But he said each week, somebody needs the message. And today, if that's you here or that's you online, I hope that something I've said today resonates with you. It strikes a chord with you. It gives you comfort or makes you feel a need. At the end of the lesson, we like to provide a time for individuals to come forward, make their needs known, to ask for prayer, ask for help. So if that's you, this is your opportunity as we stand and sing.